have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in the Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you was going to be this good, but it feels good!
First, I need the national championship.
Welcome back, everyone. Episode 3-0 of the Boardroom here. A little wordplay for you as our undefeated Fighting Illini are the MTE champions. Will they hang a banner for that next year? Do you guys know if we get some sort of something in the rafters?
We didn't hang a banner for them from our banners, but I think they'll get a banner.
I think they should get some sort of banner for
Illini
that.
Illini board MTE 2020 champs.
2020 champions.
We did it.
It's almost as big as, if you're a Bulls fan, the Bulls Summer League championship. Those are real good. But let's go ahead and chat it up a little bit about what we saw from the MTE this last weekend. I know I've got some takes, some stuff I'd like to talk about. Who wants to kick it off, you know, starting up with game one a little bit?
Well, I mean, everyone wants to talk about game three, which we all got our sweats in. We're finally in midseason form in terms of seeing a close game, going through the motions of, oh no, we're not going to be a one or a two seed or a three seed if we have an Ohio loss on our resume. So now we're in midseason form after a couple of tune-up games, and we're mentally there as fans for the games that are kind of to come.
We haven't watched an Illinois basketball game in a long time, and getting that adrenaline rush of being like, oh, like you said, Johnny, like I was rusty. I was a little rusty. I was like, what is this feeling?
We were almost, even at the first 4 minutes of the A&T game, and we're not killing them right away. I'm like, what's going on here? And then those first two games, we dominate them. Then I'm expecting Adam Miller to make every single shot of his career. And fortunately, the one thing that did hold through in the Ohio game is Ayo Dosunmu. He still got that clutch gene. Okay, point those fingers at his veins, because he hit those clutch free throws. He got us the winning game.
Did we get an official ruling on if that is an official point to the veins there for our over-unders that we set, or no?
I don't think it technically was.
Okay, so because it's a free throw. Still at zero. Oh, it was free throw, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that counts. It was awesome, though. It wasn't really awesome, but it was awesome to feel that adrenaline of being like, oh, huh, we won. We can relax now. Our weekend isn't completely ruined.
It's no need to hit the panic button. This is a program, Ohio, that's made the Sweet 16 in recent memory.
And do you know who was their coach on that Sweet 16?
I don't know.
Huh. Who's their coach? Is he an up-and-coming guy? I don't know if there's a vacancy open anytime soon. You know, we might be looking at a guy from Ohio, you know.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, here's what I wanted to bring up. This is the one burning thing that I've been thinking about. Game two versus Chicago State, you know, it's first half and we're already up like, what, 30 points, right? And, you know, there's tweets out there on the internet that are like, no one's enjoying this. Like, what's going on? And we feel bad for the Chicago State players. We're up 30 points. Get that out of here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry. Did the University of Iowa feel bad when they were winning 63-0 against Illinois? Did they tell us to take their foot off the pedal? And then the next day, you have us barely beat an Ohio team. It's so, get that loser mentality out of here. This is no longer Illinois of, hey, feel sorry for them. Like, I want them to win by 85 points, and the fact that you have Twitter accounts out there being like, no one's enjoying this, we don't want to see them win by that much, is just a loser's mentality. And as I'm reading that, I'm like, why would you not want them to just win? I get there's a talent discrepancy there, I understand. But to have that mentality, especially the next day where you almost blow it, to me, it's just like, get that weak sauce out of here.
I think what they were trying to say is, we need to save the points for the next day. Like, we don't need to win by 60. That might have been going what
well,
they were going for.
If I had known that day three was going to happen, that's fair. But, you know, University of Alabama football team, they beat Kentucky 63-3 the other day, right? Like, no one's feeling sorry for Kentucky. Nick Saban isn't on the sideline, like, not coaching them up or telling them to take their foot off the gas. Like, that's not how sports works. This is high D1 basketball. Like, you play to win and you play to play well. And I don't think anyone should be apologetic if we're up big in these games, especially when the next day you almost blow it to a lesser opponent.
Sound like Jim Mora. We play to win the
game.
Yeah,
sorry. I just had to get that off my chest here because we've been waiting for a team that's good. And now that we have a team that's good, and you're just going to be like, hey, don't win by that many points, especially when you have to beat Chicago State on a buzzer beater in 2015 in Springfield, JCL. Like, you don't need to be apologetic. These are scholarship athletes that you're going up against, D1 players that also play basketball. They might be, you know, one of the worst teams in D1, fine, but these are still scholarship athletes that still, you know, train their butt off and are good basketball players. So don't be apologetic.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're going to be upset about something too, maybe it's more get upset about like, hey, why didn't we destroy Ohio? But you know what? We got the win. And what I will say is you did see your team at least respond to some adversity early. It was great to see us when we're down 49-41. Damonte Williams just showing up. So glad we were able to kind of fight back there. It's going to be a weird season, as we all noticed, without having the State Farm Center crowd there, no Orange Crush. And really, you're going to need to derive energy in different ways. But at least we can
Ohio
kind of
bench derived their energy, if we want to talk about them with their little Mickey Mouse defense chats there.
Yeah, and BTN was playing that up so much.
They were.
And my only thing that I'll say about this is it was a lot better, this BTN crew, to have these guys for the first three games than the schmack guy from BTN Student
U. We still
respect
him.
Oh, we like Anthony Pasquale.
We respect you. If you're listening, we respect you.
That was like torture to me. It might have been because I had Illinois minus 15 against Nicholls State and we didn't cover, but to see the lack of professionalism from these kids in BTN Student U, it was great to see Stephen Bardo have some really insightful comments and learn about a really interesting story with Jason
Preston.
Preston. Yeah, the guy from
Ohio.
What
a story. Yeah, absolutely. What a story.
Yeah, but I would say, to quote the Student U crew, we noticed the absence of Andres Feliz, the Dominican Republican player.
Yeah. You know, on Twitter, he goes by the Schmack Kid, right? Like, yeah, that's his Twitter name. So he leans into it. Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah, look, I have no problem with that.
It's not easy to call a game. I would not have done any better than him.
This kid, he thought he was in the clear. Nicholls State is up like 25, and then suddenly he's calling it overtime. That's
like 25 against Nicholls State. Yeah, and all
more,
of a sudden,
more than he bargained for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a tough position to put any announcer in. Do we want to talk maybe like the best banner that Twitter reached out to
you? Yeah, like best hot take, friend.
Yeah, we got one or two tattoo bets, and we got one saying that they're tattooing 217 if they make, I think it was just the Final Four, so you're off the hook. I mean, you're on the hook if they make the Final Four, and then if we win the national championship. We got one that said that they will tattoo Brad Underwood onto them. So I don't know if it was gonna be his face or just his name.
His name would be interesting, just getting like Brad on one shoulder and Underwood on the other.
The face is pretty creepy.
This is a little creepy too.
Well, but at least it's not like a toned down.
Yeah,
Brad,
he doesn't have three chins.
Yeah,
right.
In the words, weight. Yeah, absolutely. In the words of his daughter. So, do you think Brad Underwood, though, if you win the national championship, if you're Brad Underwood, would you be okay with getting a tattoo?
I would just make sure the wins aren't going anywhere.
Right. If you look back to what year did they win it? Rick Pitino, 2013, yeah, when Rick Pitino has a very permanent tattoo of national champions.
He won the national championship.
Vacated.
It's a good reminder for him because they don't have the banner in the Yum Center, so he can always point to his
right.
shoulder.
I was in Louisville last year for the Louisville-Michigan game, and every fan, like, not every fan, but it's just like the same fans that bring the W for Cubs fans, they brought the banner for the national championships, and then they were honoring people from that championship team while that game was going on. It was just really funny, and they are so, like, upset about how they have to, like, vacate all their losses. In Louisville, those losses aren't vacated, I can tell you that.
No, if you're going there, they're not going to speak a word of such vacated losses. The tattoo's there. That's proof.
You think as Pitino is getting that, he's like, I hope they don't find out about it.
I really hope they don't figure this out.
Are you sure this is permanent?
Yeah, put it in a place where they can't see the tattoo just in case, you know, it gets covered up. Does Reggie Bush have like a Heisman tattoo somewhere?
So, yeah, it's next to his UCF national championship. Yes.
Yeah, I might get a tattoo that just says undefeated in basketball and football in Thanksgiving week 2020. Okay,
that's true.
All I'm going to say is Ohio State didn't come up to play, and we went undefeated this week, just as everyone predicted. So I'm proud of her.
If you had told me we'd be undefeated, I would probably say 2-point win against Ohio and no contest against Ohio State. That's exactly how I would have predicted it.
That's how we drew
it
up.
We'll be telling our grandkids about this weekend.
MTE Champions 2020. One thing, I don't know if any of you saw like any fun Twitter takes, because we know we like to talk about Twitter. After the first game, people were saying how there's five pros on the Illinois roster. Five. You know, four maybe you'd expect.
Can we guess them?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and guess them.
I mean, obviously, Io, Kofi, Miller,
right?
Curbelo.
Yes, and then the fifth one, which multiple people were saying
after the first game.
After the first game.
Demonte
Brandon
Williams?
Lieb?
No, no. All great guesses if you want to. People were saying Coleman. He's headed to the league.
Oh,
God. I mean, after one game. I love this. I love these hot Twitter takes after a game. I live for these takes. You know, I live for Twitter comments under final score tweets. I love it. I would love Coleman to be an NBA player. I'm glad Adam Miller missed like 1-3. Otherwise, he might be, you know, a little one and done here. So it was good that, you know, his 3-point percentage was like, you know, 83% instead of like 100, because that might have wanted him to, you know, declare early. But five, maybe six players?
No.
And I'll put my right hand up here in saying that I may or may not have made a few tweets, including saying he's a lottery pick and referring to and referring to Io, and maybe saying is Adam Miller one and done. So I don't know who these people are, but they're really smart, I guess.
Wouldn't be me. Wouldn't be us. Absolutely.
So as we're trying to grow our brand here, I've taken over tweet making posts and comments for Instagram account, which you guys should all follow. But if you think the Twitter takes are bad, you should read the comments underneath an Instagram post. Like after each half, you have Illinois giving a graphic and they're like, you should have done better here. And like, they get so specific, mm-hmm. but the Instagram comments are just as bad as the Twitter comments. And speaking of, let's just talk about Instagram for a second. I am okay with players being excited about how they play. I don't know if you should be posting 89 Insta stories.
Approximately
after you beat Chicago State.
Would you have been able to beat Chicago State?
I don't think I would have, but I would hope that our top 40 point guard that we recruited to hopefully like lead us to Final Four's national championship isn't that excited. I know it was his second game of playing college basketball, but Andre Curbelo, I'm excited for you. Let's just tone it down a tiny bit. Let's be humble.
I disagree. I think he can have as much fun as he wants if you're a Division I college basketball. That's just my opinion. We can disagree. That's okay. But it was a lot to click through. But I think it just means he has a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Watching him play.
I would say in a similar vein, after the first game, Adam Miller said, it shouldn't be a surprise if I put up these kinds of numbers.
No,
I hope it's okay. Not a surprise, but don't be surprised if you get guarded in future games.
As I've said before, confidence and cockiness.
It's a fine line, but I'm glad
I like
to
his
see
confidence.
These guys are 18 years old. They're coming into their first set of college games. They're having fun. I don't think it's going to impact them moving. Like, I think they understand the level of opponent and that it's not going to be, you know, you're clearly not going to win by 60 every game as they saw in the third game, but they're just having a little fun.
Yeah, they are. I think one thing they'll need to get used to is, like Brad said before the season and I said it a few days ago, is they are the hunted. They've come onto a team that finished off last season hot, so they're kind of in the mix with things.
They're gonna get everyone's best shot.
They're gonna get starting with Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. So should we maybe get to Tyler?
Yeah, let's talk some technical stuff because we clearly don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I have no idea. Okay, cool. So we're gonna cut it to Tyler, everyone's favorite walk-on. All right, so here's Tyler. Here, we're gonna get right into it. We're joined by our favorite walk-on, Tyler. Thank you so much for joining us here. Let's just start with some general thoughts on the MTE. I mean, you know, everyone saw it. We're 3-0, but just general headlines from your perspective.
Well, I think it's one of those situations where you don't want to go too far either direction. You didn't want to take too much positive from blowing out NCAA by 60 and then Chicago State by 60. But on the other hand, you don't want to go too far the other way because you got taken to the for a full 40 minutes by Ohio yesterday. Those things happen. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe I'm wish casting a little bit, but, you know, and we'll look back after a disappointing season and say, well, everything that we saw in that Ohio game, we saw what was going to actually take place over the course of the year. But I don't get that sense from yesterday. I thought we actually played pretty well, except for a few issues that I think are fixable. And so overall, I thought it was a successful 3 days. You had two blowouts. You got to see a lot of players. You got a sense of the rotation and you got tested a little bit. So I think it's a nice segue into a big Baylor matchup on Tuesday.
It's nice to see that you are like relaxed after it. I know our fan base likes to just ebb and flow from like the extreme highs and the extreme lows from like every game, whether it's football or basketball. It's like,
we were actually just like the best team in the country the first two games, right. And then we're a fringe tournament team now.
exactly. Ohio There's game, just that so massive ebb and flow.
Appreciate a little nuance there.
And so it is nice that there is actually not even like an excuse, but like a genuine explanation. And it's not like, you know, we're just terrible or good based off one game.
Well, don't get me wrong. When I had my fan hat on, like I didn't cover the game on Wednesday, Robert did. And so my mindset is completely different. I try to wear two different hats, you know, whether I'm at the game covering like I was the last couple of days or at home watching the game. But so just to give you a little insight into how my fan brain works in the moment, you know, I'm actually at work on Wednesday. And I don't know if you know this, but in my real life, my real world job is a physical therapist. That's what I do. And so the game's at 1:00. I have a 1:00 patient. And so she comes in, say hi, you know, and I get her started on some warm-ups. And it's like 5:01, 10:01. I got my phone at my desk. I'm going to check it real fast what the score is. It's 8-5. And I'm immediately irritated. I'm like, one possession game and we're at the first TV timeout. What is going on here? And I'm immediately angry. And then I go back and work with her a little bit. And she's doing some other exercise. I go back, check my phone real fast. It was like 35-8. So I'm like, okay, that's bad.
Right.
So I put the same things in the moment that everyone else does. It's just more after the game. And I hope that games, you know, you get to take a step back and look at the big picture and try to take a more even keel approach.
Definitely. All right, so let's kind of dive into the game yesterday, which was obviously the close game, and a lot we can learn from it. One of the there was two big issues that we kind of saw that you wrote about as well, with our pick and roll defense, as well as just we had to rely a lot on Io. Can you kind of dive in what your thoughts are like when we were going to start facing teams that have like good players at the 3, 4, and 5, and we're going to have DeMonte playing them, defending them? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's an interesting dilemma because Brad Underwood, after the game, he did say that the strategy that they talked about going into the game, they stuck with the whole time, which was they were worried about the 3-point shooting of Ohio. That was what their MO is. They shoot 35 threes a game, and they wanted to take that piece away. I mean, which, you know, you look at metrics, and that's kind of what you do. You don't want to get beat by threes. You take a 2 and trade of a 3 any day. So they did that, and they tried to narrow it into a 2-person game so that they don't lead the 3-point shooters. They're not gonna cheat off of that to help with some of those off the pick and roll. So that leaves your 2 pick and roll defenders kind of on an island. And if you got a 2 guys who had it going like Jacob Preston and the Vanderplas guy did yesterday, then it's a problem. And Brad Underwood even said, you know, we chose to live and die with this and we almost died by it. And, right. You know, that's going to happen. But Illinois used that same strategy to great effect several times in the Big Ten last year. They did it against Michigan.
Yeah.
They did it against Purdue. They do it against MSU. But yesterday they ran into a buzzsaw. That kid from Ohio was fantastic.
He was unreal.
Really good.
They both played really well.
Yeah, if we have free agency in college basketball next year, he's first on my list to replace Island.
I think.
He's also just a great kid too. So you're kind of rooting for him, aside from the fact that he's torching you. My only fear is that if we don't have someone to be able to kind of guard him and shut him down, what happens when we were all watching this Gonzaga game and they have 5 studs and they have Jalen Suggs scoring 20 points? Like, who's our defender on a guy who's maybe 6'5", a little too tall for Trent? And
yeah, it's an impossible question to answer because I'm terrified of Gonzaga. I mean, they have exactly what I described as the worst matchups. They got a bunch of 6'8" guys who can shoot the ball from the outside. They can take the ball in the post, and those guys are going to be bad matchups for us. They just are, because, you know, if we go 4 guards, DeMonte's going to draw the assignment on the quote-unquote 4, and if that 4 can score in the post, he's going to be too big for DeMonte in some cases. But if we try to trade it off, like, okay, we'll go big, you know, Georgie, he's really a struggle on the perimeter, and that's – so, you're probably going to err on the side of let DeMonte let a guy take him in the post because you'd rather trade 2 for 3, but – as we move forward, those stretch fours who are really good are going to give Illinois difficulties. And a team like Gonzaga that's got multiple options like that, I mean, that's a tough out. But, I mean, they're terrifying. We're hanging 100 on NCAA&T, and they're hanging 100 on Kansas. So, you know, that's
– Yeah, I think that's the thing, too, is that kind of goes back to maybe us being meatball fans a little bit. Like, we're not even playing Gonzaga until the NCAA tournament this year. So maybe we shouldn't spend too much energy being so concerned about how we're going to defend them. But that's what I'm thinking on Thanksgiving when I see us win two games by 60 points each. It's like, okay, well, we got to think about who we're playing in the Final Four. But maybe it's like, let's take a step back here. Let's think about who we can beat in the Big Ten.
And that's the fun part that we have right now. We finally have a team where we can like watch other college basketball and line our team up against them.
Do you think, so going off of that, do you think after watching the game yesterday, do you feel like our starting point, and it sounded like Robert kind of thought maybe we're just not quite at that top 10 level yet, which is totally okay. We've got a long season ahead. Do you feel like our starting point after watching that is any lower, or is it more just kind of a not a great matchup, a few things Ohio did, worked well against us, guys having a really good game, or is it kind of a combo of different things?
No, I don't. I'm still very bullish on this team, and I think our ranking is still accurate for where we are. I mean, upsets happen. I listened to you guys on your podcast, the first couple episodes, and you specifically mentioned Illinois' unique history of having mid-major guards come in and torch us. The Winthrop guy and the Miami kid last year, and you know, guys are going to go off sometimes, and that happens, and. Sometimes you just tip your cap and hopefully you have enough answers on the other side. And as I wrote in my article or my post after the game, though, even with that, the one issue that Illinois did struggle with, and they actually struggled in the first three games, is turnovers. And that's a fixable issue. You know, I was concerned going into the season with the shooting, and I was concerned with how the freshmen would respond. Obviously, Adam Miller's been great. They're shooting 40%+ from three in the first three games. So those things have been there, my big picture worries. And I'm confident that the turnover issue, as we get a little more comfortable with the season and you kind of settle in, I think that component will improve. And so that's why I was more encouraged by our shooting and our rebounding and the play of Adam Miller than I was discouraged that we turned the ball over too much in the first game, or that discouraged that one guy went off for 30 on us.
Yeah, so I have a question that sort of ties in with this idea of like the sloppiness and the mistakes. So Zach Griffith, as you saw, came in the first half against Ohio, and he played like legitimate minutes there. Was that a plan thing? Was that a rotation thing? Was that a foul thing? Was that a punishment thing? Because is Underwood just trying to light a fire under these guys? I mean, if you're a player in that system, like, are you upset that Griffith is coming in? Are you saying, like, why is he playing? I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Well, so here's where being at the game, you get a unique perspective, because here's what happened. And with the media section, we're behind the baskets now, and but we're on the Illinois side of the floor, so we can see the bench really close. And right before Zach Griffith came in, Coleman Hawkins came into the game, and he immediately made two terrible defensive plays back-to-back. And Underwood just, he got that, you know, that look in his eye where he's just stomping around and he's trying to grab anybody. And the benches are all socially distanced and you can't find the guy you're looking for. And so he's just looking around for anybody. And he points at, I think he was trying to point to Jacob Grandison, but he pointed at Zach Griffith and Zach like, okay, I better go in. So he'd say, you know, he runs to the scorer's bench, goes in, he gets scored out immediately. And Underwood immediately takes him out and replaces him with Jacob Grandison. So I really think in the moment, he just couldn't find the guy he was looking for it's a unique circumstance based on how the benches are all socially distanced.
Wow.
Due to COVID.
Remarkable. It's like almost like the Deuce Spann thing where they can't find their guy on the bench there with Illinois football. I mean, that's remarkable that's actually, I would never have thought that. I think that Underwood sometimes likes to get, you know, I almost take it personally where it's like, this guy made a mistake. I'm going to play the walk-on. I'm going to play the end bench player guy to prove that you guys are playing so sloppy, which is just a remarkable thing that he would do in a game that you really want to win. And so I guess there is a reason why he did that.
I wouldn't discount that completely, but just watching, and I wouldn't have seen Underwood's reaction, how he jumped off the bench after the second Coleman Hawkins mistake. And just started stomping around and pointing around, and his fingers found found Zach Griffith as opposed to Jacob Grandison. And again, he came back out after like one possession. So it wasn't like a long, if it was supposed to be a message, it wasn't a long message. So
that's what I miss. That's what I miss kind of about like when we're sitting behind the bench, like when we were in Orange Cross, we would consistently just try to be like pretty much in front, like behind where Underwood would sit, just so we can kind of hear him talk and hear him yell at the players. And I always remember that like feeling like that he gets inside of him where he's just going off at a player, but he's like going like maniac and he just doesn't know what he's actually doing.
He's just looking for someone to grab or someone to talk to, like, and just release his anger and his emotion.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like a crazy like person going at it.
So I'm curious, as a former player, what's that kind of like when you're on the bench, something goes wrong and you're kind of in the mix, but you weren't in the game? Is it kind of like an uncomfortable position where you're sort of witnessing it all go down? What's that sort of like?
Well, you can be assured that as angry as you see a coach get on the sideline during a game, you can take that times three as to what happens in a practice. So you've seen the full spectrum. You've seen those guys take it to 11. And so in the middle of a game, in the heat of the moment, you know, you're not surprised if your coach is really going off and making a scene, because you've seen it all before. So those guys, I don't think it's too big of a surprise, because I guarantee you they've seen Underwood at his full rage status.
Yeah. And another just kind of like your unique perspective question I have is specifically with the Ohio bench, seeing their walk-ons kind of like light a fire under those guys, what your kind of reaction was at the stadium, and also what, when you were a walk-on, you felt like you had to kind of take on this this responsibility of kind of getting the team going through your enthusiasm as opposed to your play on the court.
Yeah, it was really a weird dynamic yesterday, because there's no crowd, and Ohio's bench was extremely chirpy. I mean, the other two teams, obviously they never had a chance to get into it, but from the first possession, they were chirpy. And, you know, my first take is, you know, if you're not going to get in the game, maybe tone it down a little bit, you know, because it wasn't just like cheering on your team. They were like a legit student section. Georgie was shooting a free throw, and you hear, "You suck!" scream and echo through the entire assembly hall. I mean, it's State Farm Center, and it's just like, really? And by contrast, Illinois' bench was really quiet. And under normal circumstance, you know, that enthusiasm and those little catcalls are going to get drowned out by the home crowd. But because it was an empty arena, and they were vocal, and until the Illinois bench matched their intensity into the, you know, by probably halfway through the second half, it was a really odd dynamic. Because of course, you know, your job as a walk-on is to kind of pump the team up, a bench player, I should say. But you know, that still gets kind of lost in the crowd, though. You do a little extra one-on-one pump up, getting the guys in the guy's head, and really try to encourage him during huddles and stuff. Because you know, on the floor, you're not usually paying attention to it because it's just one loud din. But yesterday, the Ohio bench was an extremely vocal entity, and just made me curious as how that's going to work and affect home court in the big picture as we go on through the season. Is it going to completely negate home court because of that situation? Because you can have an opponent's bench become a fan section, if you will, even though you're playing on your home court. It was really a unique situation.
And would you say your best tools to walk on? Were you a big high five guy, or more of like a towel waver or a dancer? What was your role?
Oh, I was a fist pumper. I
mean, led the nation.
My patented move was to jump forward, slide on my knees, and give. I think I invented the tiger fist pump, because you go back and look at some YouTubes from there are 1989 games with Michigan and so on and so forth. I got a lot of good TV time. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, and you had a good spot right at kind of like the end of the bench, and there's the video. There's the one video of you jumping that I vividly remember.
Yeah, I was able to explore the whole space, and I had the whole base under us. So
That's so good.
That was my go-to move. So
I love it. I love it. So what can guys like Edgar Padilla, Connor Servin, you know, Zach Griffith, what can they do to improve their high fives and their like dance moves to pump up the team in between timeouts? What advice would you give them?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the music is way better these days. And we did, you know, that's the one thing that current walk-on said is you have this, the sound system that's much higher capacity. And I think you can kind of use that to get in your groove a little bit where when I was playing, it was just more the band. So that's probably, my advice would be to, you know, let the music kind of take you where you want to go. But I don't know if you need a whole, like, what was the team a few years back that had that whole dance?
Oh, yeah. It was a mid-major team.
Or Wolford or somebody like that.
Was it a mid-major team?
Yeah, it might have been Monmouth, but they were good that year. They made the tournament, and they rode that momentum, like, into the tournament. So it kind of was justified, I think.
I think all you have to do is try not to be that kid on DePaul.
He was good. He pumped the team up.
No, it was interesting, though. I was listening to an interview with Pat Fitzgerald. Obviously, this is football, but he said he actually thought home teams in the Big Ten had a bigger advantage this year because in football, the road teams, they can't bring everyone, whereas the home team, you've got 90 guys on the sideline, so it's really like a you versus them thing. But to your point, that'll be interesting to see with the road team and the home team kind of on even footing in that regard. Obviously, a big year for walk-ons.
Huge year for walk-ons.
Yeah, it is, but it is a weird dynamic. I'm sure you can see on TV how the benches are all spread out, and the walk-ons are kind of in the back row, off in the corner. So they're pretty far away from the actual action. So it's a little bit harder to kind of find your groove in that situation. So, mm-hmm.
So for they'll have to
keep into their bag of tricks to come up with a unique way to set themselves apart.
Mm-hmm. So for those of us who maybe weren't around both physically or as Illini fans back to see you play in your heyday, if you had to compare your game to any walk-on in the last decade of Illinois basketball, who's your player comp?
Wow, that's a really good question. my player comp would probably be Tyler Underwood, to be honest. Ah. We're a similar build.
Did you get to start on senior night?
No.
Junior night? Maybe sophomore night?
My sum total of game experience is 2 games with 0 stats. So that the hierarchy of walk-ons would have put me well down the list if there was a senior night kind of thing. So no. But yeah, I would say I was kind of a Tyler Underwood scenario. That would be a pretty good comp, I think. Yeah,
that UIC game, right? Big performance out of you. Got a minute in there.
I think I saw some fist bumps in the box score too. You scroll all the way over.
The intangibles is some things that you just can't measure the outcome.
All right, so comparing now, let's do more of the 1989 team to the 2020 team. Who do you got? Like, how would you compare the team? Who kind of relates to another? And then what would be the final score if they played each other?
You know, we've done this a lot with 2005 versus the 1989 team. And the consensus, you know, obviously I'm biased, but I don't think that this 2020 team is at that level. At least, you know, let's see how the season goes. Of either of those two teams, I just look at the matchups, you know, and obviously Io is probably going to. You think, well, who's the best player on this team? It's Io, but is Io a lottery pick? Is Io going to start on the 2005 team over Luther Head or D Brown or Darren Williams? Even, I mean, you think is Io going to start over Kendall Gill or Nick Anderson? You know, you have to really dive deep. You think, well, of course Iowa would start, but then you think, well, who would he replace? I think that you could have a discussion about the 2005 team versus the 89 team, you know, play 10 games. I think the 89 team probably wins 6 or 7. You put the 2005 team or the 89 team against this team right now, this 2020 team, I don't think it's much of a contest to be. I mean, that's at least until they've proven something.
Right, now that makes sense. We're projecting a Final Four team right now, and we're coming off of a 1-point loss to 1-point win to Ohio. So I guess the comparisons are probably not that.
It's early.
Yeah, and not only were they Final Four teams, like Will Leach said, like not only were they Final Four teams, these were like generational teams that were dominant. Like if you look at KenPom or something, that 05 team was the best team in almost every other year in the 2000s. So it's almost even unfair to say, even if this team makes the Final Four, there's a really valid case that the Flying Illini, who Dickie V says is like one of his favorite teams ever, is still better than this team. And that's fine. I mean, we're just happy to have a team that's in the caliber of being in the Elite Eight or in that conversation.
There were seven. The 80-90 had seven pros on the roster. I mean,
and a physical therapist.
And Tiger Woods' agent, Mark Steinberg. There's your little.
Oh, wow.
Who would have thought that arguably like the most important person on that team was not one of the key contributors?
When we get together, we always have that discussion. The trivia when I'm talking to people, who's the most successful guy from the 89 team? Oh, it's Mark Steinberg, who's Tiger Woods' agent.
Can I throw a name in there? Were you friends with Ryan Baker? I know he was a manager on that 89 team as well.
Yeah, I mean, friends. And when I see Ryan at games and such, or, you know, when we run into each other at events, yeah, we still dap it up. And same with all those guys. We had a really good relationship with the managers. And, of course, the walk-ons are a little more closer to managers than they are to actually playing. So, you know, the managers and the walk-ons had a lot of time together, to be honest. And another walk-on, Jim Phillips, who's obviously the AD at Northwestern.
Oh my God.
He was a manager as well. So it's a pretty star-studded list, you know, not even from a basketball standpoint to see where some of these guys ended up. But, yeah, Ryan Baker is still a good friend. See him a lot at events and always have good conversations with him when we have reunions and every time I see him at games and such.
And I guess another question is, what was kind of like the life of a walk-on back in 89, and how would you compare that to now, obviously with the 2020 team, maybe also just compared to like a D1 athlete now, where it seems like they have a lot of kind of gushy amenities that you might not have had access to back in the
home days? It is a lot different. You know, for one thing, we had like 17 walk-ons, let's be honest. There was literally eight of us. And so we would alternate games of dressing and road trips, four and four. And because there were different rules as far as how many people you could dress due to the NCAA. And that's they've kind of tightened that up a little bit. So you can't have unlimited number of walk-ons on your bench like we used to. So that's first and foremost. And as any of the walk-ons would tell you from my era would tell you now, that what the coaches were looking for in walk-ons weren't the best guys on campus. I mean, it's not like, well, the 12 scholarship guys are the top 12 players on campus, and then the eight walk-ons were the next eight best basketball players on campus. That's not the case at all. But they didn't want guys coming into practice trying to find minutes on the floor. They wanted guys who could learn an offense or a defense and under short in a short duration. They didn't want guys to worry about grades or anything that we have to worry about behavioral issues or off the court issues. So they had a pretty strict idea of what they're looking for in a walk on back then. And so our job was basically from practice to practice, we would go into the film room with Coach Coombs, who was kind of the walk on coach, and we would do scout team breakdown and kind of match up and say, okay, we're playing Michigan next week. Tyler, you're Glenn Rice, and Travis, you're Ramil Robinson, and so on and so forth. And so you'd match up and just kind of learn what they would do. And that's what you do in practice. I mean, in run scout team drills and be the offense or defense for your opponent. And then on to the next opponent, and we do the same thing over and over again. We had full access to everything the team did except the training table. As a scholarship athlete, non-scholarship athlete, you couldn't get training table. However, when you're on the road, you did get per diems, which is kind of nice. So I assume that the big difference now is with the roster differences is that the walk-on, you can have a roster of up to I think 15 guys, and even the walk-ons, non-scholarship, still have access to all the training table and all the benefits that the scholarship athlete would.
So going back to the kind of looking back to say like the 80s, do you have a specific recruiting story that sticks to mind? Just one of your teammates or something that you had heard or been a part of during your time in the 80s?
Oh, Shaquille O'Neal is the best story. So Shaq is a recruit, and you know, recruiting is not like it is now, where you know you go on the internet and see 247 top 100 or the rivals. It's just like everything you learned about recruiting you saw in the newspaper, and you say, oh, the Illini are bringing in Shaquille O'Neal for a visit, and you know, prior to the visit, you say, hey, we're bringing some recruits in. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to show them around, and he's going to come to practice, and we're going to take him to the games. But it was Halloween weekend, and of course, you guys remember the how Halloween used to be on campus. At least I assume you know.
Let's hear
it. Let's hear the differences.
Well,
Halloween weekend used to be the most insane off the hook party weekend all school year, and I think that the St. Patrick's Day unofficial became kind of took that crown away from Halloween, but Halloween predated unofficial. You know, unofficial that was a thing, a huge thing, and then they kind of had to tone that down a little bit for many reasons. That's what Halloween used to be like. I mean, it would start Thursday, whatever the weekend was, and it would go all the way through Sunday. And they would shut down all of Green Street, and just it would be a mob scene of people out there. And they bring Shaquille O'Neal, and you had this 7'2" mountain of a man walking around with this big fluffy Russian hat, just walking through campus holding court, and it was the most surreal scene you could imagine. Just that you got Shaquille O'Neal, NBA Hall of Famer, was on campus at the U of I Halloween celebration. Of course, he ended up going to LSU, but that was probably the coolest recruiting story that I recall from my time.
I think I had heard him give an interview about his visit to Illinois, and he talked about how it was just like way too cold up there for him, and there was just no way he was going to, you know, go somewhere like Champaign, Central Illinois. It was just freezing up there, and so he was like, I'm not going here.
Like 50, he had a big, huge Russian fluffy, you know, one of those hats with the ears that flop down. It was just so obviously it wasn't going to work for him, but he was great.
Okay, so speaking of stories, I'm curious, as someone who got to be close to the game, you kind of got to take a lot of things in from the bench. Was there any stories, maybe it was a coach having a very uncomfortable altercation with an official or something you heard from a student section, anything crazy you heard or experienced while being on the bench during that 89 season or during your time in college?
The most controversial event or issue we had that I recall was actually at Northwestern, and student sections were just kind of getting started back then. You know, the Orange Crush was relatively new. There, you know, now every single Big Ten team has a student section. It wasn't that way back in the 80s, but at Northwestern, and Northwestern was terrible, like they always were back then. And we're blowing them out by whatever. And all of a sudden they start throwing dimes and pennies on the court from the student section. And there was about a brawl. I mean, Lowell Hamilton, I remember specifically, was wanting to go into the NU student section and go down. But that's, I mean, other than that, I don't recall anything too crazy that happened as far as a student section or a fan or a coach getting into it. I mean, there was the famous Bobby Knight, Lou Henson dust up that, you know, after the game in the tunnel, Lou got right in Bobby's face. And Bobby's, you know, Bobby played college basketball. He's like 6'5". You know, you probably don't, you know, you see Bobby Knight, you know, or remember Bobby Knight, you don't think of him as this big guy, but he's a big dude. And Lou was tiny. Coach Henson was a small guy. He was probably 5'10". And he's literally on his tiptoes pointing right up to Bob Knight's chin saying, "You're a big bully." And then, you know, that's about as angry and you know, because Lou didn't cuss. But to see him going off in Bobby Knight's face like that was that's a scene I'll never forget either. It's pretty intense.
I love that. Those are like the types of things where I feel like at the time you don't realize how awesome that is. But now looking back, two legendary coaches, that's such a great story and unique interaction.
Great. It was always really hard for me because at no point during my entire time as a walk-on did I ever quite lose the sense of I'm still the biggest fan? I mean, I grew up like you. I mean, huge fans of Illinois sports from when I was in sixth, seventh grade. And for me to get this opportunity, it really never quite hit me that, you know, I have a uniform on and I'm kind of playing, because I still viewed myself as, oh my God, I'm still such a huge fan of these guys. And, you know, looking back at it now, it's just amazing that I was able to have the best seat in the house for some of those amazing games. But I still remember myself thinking, you know, I'm still in awe of these guys, even though I'm playing against them in practice every day.
Yeah. So, like, how did you get recruited to become a walk on? Did you just get into the school?
I didn't walk on to my junior year at U of I, and I went at the behest of my roommate. We had an intramural team that was pretty good, but like I said, it's not like we were dominant, you know. And like when I'd walk into the gym, that like, oh, there's Tyler, you know, get him on court A at Impey. But so they have open tryouts, and you know, probably 50 guys show up, and there's a wide range of talent, guys who have no business being there, and guys who probably were complete studs in high school, but they're looking for a very specific thing. And so I remember they broke the different tryout applicants, whatever you want to call it, into groups, and they showed some film and said, okay, learn this offense and then run it with you five guys. We'll run this offense against these five guys. And I think they were looking how fast you could pick things up. And of course they wanted to make sure you could dribble and shoot the ball at a base level. I mean, not like we were inept at playing basketball. It's just that we weren't the most talented. And so then we had this tryout that lasted like most of the day and lots of drills, and we had lots of film work. And then the next day I get a phone call that they want me to come back and had a little interview with the coaching staff. And after that, they said, welcome to the team. And my roommate, not so much. So
that must have been a tough night.
Yeah. So,
all right.
He was great. He got tickets to every game, so he wasn't too upset.
Not too bad.
Lucky guy to go see
the
1989 Illini. So going back to one of those games, there's a lot brought up by like the NCAA tournament games, but a lot of people I think don't really realize the history of bragging rights. You were part of a 6th-ranked Illinois team versus the 10th-ranked Mizzou team. Can you kind of do a quick oral history of that game and, like, how crazy was it then compared to the games now? And then how do we get back to that scenario? I guess now it's Mizzou has to start getting good, but...
That's what it boils down to. You need two good teams, because that's what makes the arena. When you have a full stadium, and back then it was a Checker Dome, right down the middle of the court, you got orange and black on one side, and yellow and black on one side, orange and blue on the other, and it is just on from the minute you walk in. But if one team or another is down, then the crowd, the intensity is just not there. But the game that we played against Mizzou was a barn burner. We were down 18 in that game and came back late to win. And the bragging rights was kind of in its infancy stage. I think the rivalry actually grew based on that game, because there was a lot of trash talk, and it was such a huge comeback, and the crowd was into it, and there was so much intensity. I think that game in 1988 actually was kind of the seed that really grew the rivalry, because I remember going back to St. Louis for games in the 90s and in the early 2000s, and I even walked in and said I don't remember it being this crazy as far as the crowd. So I want to say that the real rivalry grew starting in the late 80s to what it is now. And to get it back, I think you got to have two good teams. I mean, and the recent vintage games, either we haven't been up to par or Mizzou hasn't been up to par, or both of us, to be quite honest. So that suffers. I mean, the game is the game, but it's the crowd that makes it. And I don't know. I think you said that some of you have been to bragging rights, or maybe none of you have.
Not yet.
All haven't, but like, yeah, you kind of define it when we're playing the game on SEC Network at 11 a.m. Like it was last on a Saturday. It's pretty much defining how bad it is right now.
Or on a Thursday even. Like, yeah, I mean, bragging rights should be the Saturday before Christmas, prime time. No excuses. And if it's not, that's unfortunate, because it loses something
in the translation.
Yeah, and at the very least, we do have a hateable Mizzou team, so there's still some juice there. But
There will always be the juice there as long as it's Mizzou.
Usually they want to have three guys who either signed to play at Illinois or were committed.
That's not even including Parker Braun, too. So.
Oh, man.
All right, one final question we got is we want to kind of talk about
Baylor
and this upcoming week, like kind of how the way that what we're kind of like looking for in the Baylor game this week and then the Duke the week after. So what are you looking for coming up?
Well, I'm looking for two competitive games. I mean, I think in my head, if you come out of those two games with a split, you're looking pretty good. But even beyond that, I'm looking for, did we learn things in these three games this week that we're able to translate into next week? And I guess, first of all, I'm just hoping we have a game against Baylor. I mean, that Baylor thing has been a little bit shaky, obviously. Looks like it's going to happen. Robert's going to be there in the building, so that's good. And then he'll have a presence there and be able to kind of to see it up close. But Baylor's good, man. They got – typically, you think of Baylor as this team with huge athletic post players. But this year, they're a little more guard-oriented. So that'll be an interesting dynamic. I mean, you got their guy, his name escapes me, is a first team All-American
Butler,
as well.
Jared Butler.
Thank you. Yeah. Jared Butler. And so him and I will be a great matchup. And so that game's going to be great. And of course, going to Duke, Duke's young. I don't think they have the roster you typically think of from Duke, and you're at Cameron Indoor, but there's not going to be any crowd there. No media either, oddly enough. So, and I'll be honest, I haven't really dove into to Duke's lineup or what they have down to a detail. But on the surface, I think Duke's probably the more winnable game. And again, with road games being what they are, I think that the Cameron mystique is not going to be as much of a factor as it would be in normal years. But really, I wrote in the preview that every year in the schedule, there's a game or two where I learn everything I need to know about our team. And that wasn't this weekend. Sometimes it's a conference game. Sometimes it's a big non-conference matchup. But I wrote in the preview that these two games over the next couple of weeks, the Duke and Baylor games, are the games where we're going to learn what we probably need to know about this team moving forward for the rest of the season.
Yeah, how do you think we match up against TBD, too? Like, we still have that game in between.
No, isn't it Tennessee Martin?
It's not official yet.
I think it's your guys' favorite, Tennessee Martin. Yeah.
Is it official?
Yeah, after they torched us.
I didn't know if it's official, but that's what I heard. Although I did see that Notre Dame was looking for a game that weekend.
We'll take on Notre Dame. We'll also take on Notre Dame. Okay, I have one more, like, broad general question, and maybe this is for some of our younger listeners out there, especially us as a younger group of individuals. What would you say to sort of our generation of Illini fans who never really experienced what Illinois basketball really is? I mean, you think about our 4 years, our best game was maybe Michigan our freshman year, Michigan State our junior year. What would you say to our generation of Illinois fans of what Illinois basketball like really is, what it really means? Because it's hard to really understand what it is unless you were there. And I feel like individuals in my generation, we don't really know what Illinois basketball is. We're just kind of going off of what we've experienced in the last 5, 6, 7 years, which has been, you know, no tournaments, you know, exits in the Big Ten tournament, just disappointing year after disappointing year. And so how would you sort of describe in a few sentences what Illinois basketball really is and what it can be?
Well, so I want to preface that answer with some questions for you guys. Your background, where are you guys from originally? Where did you grow up and go to school?
Yeah, so we're all from the Chicagoland area, but our journey to becoming Illini fans is very different. I know Johnny was kind of a fan for a long time, and Sam kind of dabbled in some other teams in the Big Ten, which we won't name. But, you know, me, I really wasn't a fan until I got to college. You know, I just wasn't a college sports fan. And so I knew the history. Yep. I knew 05. I learned about 89. But I hadn't experienced it as a fan at all. And really my only idea of Illinois basketball was what I had experienced. And so it was hard for me to be like, oh, Illinois basketball is like this special thing, which is kind of what led me to be one of the 17. I'm like, I love football. And both teams are bad. I'll just be a bigger football fan. And so I think for so many of people who are around my age, it's tough to sort of understand what Illinois basketball really is.
And to clarify, so when Maddie's saying our junior year, the Michigan State game, that's the Malcolm Hill senior night beating Michigan State and then losing to Rutgers immediately after to fall out of the tournament.
So that was like one of two moments.
So we were 3 years of gross And then our fourth year was Underwood's first season. So we had all the Mark Alstorck and early Jamonte Williams.
Yeah. Yes.
No,
yes.
And then I always said my favorite game was a game we lost against Maryland where Anthony Cowan put up like 27 points. And he made sure to tell me at the end of the game. But it was like, it was like where we came back from a big deficit and like the Orange Crush was going crazy. I guess it was crazy for us. Because we haven't been a part of that many crazy Orange Crush experiences. But yeah, that's pretty much our experience.
Well, so, you know, that Malcolm Hill, Michigan State game, his senior night, that's about as close as you can. I mean, I remember watching the game. It was really emotional. You know, he kissed the floor and he was all too choked up at the end. And he kind of willed that team to victory. And that game is probably about as close to what fans of my generation, you know, if they grew up with good teams year after year, learn, you know, come to expect from Illinois basketball. And growing up, I grew up downstate in Charleston, which was only about an hour away. And, you know, when these guys that you know, from my generation and people who grew up in the Champaign area and grew up with that's kind of their pro team. You know, that we're guys who grew up in the middle of the state, you know, you gravitate to St. Louis or Chicago and as far as pro sports. But the University of Illinois sports program was the professional team for people of that area. And that's kind of how I grew into it. And so to see that progression, and you know, you guys grew up in Chicago, and so you're familiar with how even to this day it's almost annoying sometimes that the 85 Bear team is still revered throughout the city and throughout Chicagoland.
Absolutely.
And that's how the 89 team is kind of revered. I mean, even to this day, it's 30 years and those guys don't pay for drinks anytime they're in town. And we still have reunions 30 years from now. And there's lines around the assembly hall just to get interviews for guys. And so to grow up around that and experience that degree of specialness, that's what I think you guys have missed out on. Since you haven't had that special team, that's why I'm really hoping for guys of your generation that we can have a special year this year, so you can really become engaged and invested in the program like so many of us are now. I mean, I give you guys mad props for being such huge fans coming from your history of not being able to experience anything. No bowl games, no tournaments in 4 years of school. That's a criminal. And so without being able to experience it on a consistent basis and follow a team through the highs and lows and you know, you kind of learn to these guys that, you know, that have been here for several years and seeing them live and die with the sport and each game. I think that's what you're missing is that if you have a season like that that we all hope for this year, I think you'll get it. So that's kind of I kind of got away from what the original question was, but I think what I'm trying to say is I really hope for guys like you who haven't been able to experience it and have to ask, you know, what is Illinois basketball all about? Why is it so special? I hope you guys get to see that this year because it's worth it. And if you're invested now, you have a special season and last year was close. You know, it was really a great emotional season. So we can finish it off with a great Big Ten run and a high tournament seed and a great tournament, I think you guys will become even greater fans. And I hope that you're here for it.
Awesome.
I'm all in. I'm hyped up after hearing that. I'm absolutely all in. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you coming on, Tyler. Maybe we'll have you on in a couple weeks when we're still undefeated, you know, going into Big Ten play, and we can talk about that and on our way to our special season. We really appreciate you hopping on here, and this was a blast.
Anytime. I love the guys. You guys, you're doing great. I hope you had fun all season, and I look forward to listening to you the rest of the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tyler.
All right. Well.